Are there any people that stand out in your mind that were special or were, you know, stories?
The radio business at that time, I don't know what it's like now. I've been away from it so long. You had some really super egos that everybody tiptoed around, and they thought they were just, you know, the world's greatest. And, yeah, there was a lot of those people. But of the people I remember were the nitty-gritty, everyday, get-her-done people that would stay into the wee hours of the night writing up the playbook for tomorrow, which commercials went where, and keeping track of the billing. There were several people. A radio station doesn't work unless there's commercials. And there were several people that were just outstanding in their ability to communicate with the business people in Casper and tell them what the radio station could really do for them. And, well, I remember one remote broadcast I had to go do was at the corner of CY, Poplar, and 15th. It was a mobile gas station. And the man that owned it was from Hawaii or something. Anyway, big deal. We're going to do a Hawaiian luau radio remote at the gas station there, and I got to be the personality on the
scene. Did you used to wear a grass skirt?
I did wear a grass skirt. But it was like one of the first fall storms, so I also wore my ski parka and hat and gloves, and I had the grass skirt on me. But the gentleman who owned the station had no real clue of what was going to happen. You invite every teenager in town to come by for a six-pack of Pepsi or a movie ticket. You know, it had its magic. It had power. You would draw people. Our sales guys I think they could sell water to a guppy. I mean, we did furniture stores and gas stations, tire shops.
I know I did the Kmart show.
You did, and you know that
2.5 years.
That's something that really stands out too. The number of years you sat up there on Sundays, and you know, you're giving up your weekend, and you're doing all of this, and you did a great job. I mean, the blue light specials were mentioned, and the worst thing I thought you had probably for a job was, I think they put you on some kind of little balcony right above the popcorn stand or something.
Yes,
I can't imagine what that must have smelled like.
Right behind the service desk. So.
But, yeah, I remember that, too. That was great. And, you know, we had people that would go to different churches and make sure broadcasts happen. There's just a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and those are the people I remember. And to mention some names was Ray Ebert was super-duper sales guy. I got to work with Ray and Laramie, too. Another guy passed away while he was on our sales staff, Doug Dennebeck. I don't know.
Oh, and he married Karen.
Well, yeah, he was married to Karen, who was like the traffic manager, the lady that does all the planning of the day.
He was
and
a
so
nice
forth.
Guy. Doug was just a super guy.
He was. He was just a really friendly guy, and we'd water ski and stuff out at the lake. Just got to be pretty good friends with him. He had like a, I don't know, I think it was the first Camaro or Firebird or something I ever got to ride in. And he had parents that lived down at Erie, Colorado, so we would dash down there once in a while and get to see the big city. And he was just really a neat guy. Then Judy Lewis did basically that same job, but she was like receptionist. And, you know, the guests would come in the mid-morning for the free-for-all show, and what a friendly person. She would offer them a coffee and calm them down.
She was the first face you saw when you came in the building.
Right.
And what a treat.
She was a really nice gal, really a good person.
You worked with Bill Sims for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And, the thing that I keep thinking about is how young everybody was at that radio station.
Right. Well, they were old people to us.
But Bill Sims was the general manager, was the program director at 22 years old.
Right, right.
And whatnot. So give me a thought or two about Bill.
Oh, well, Bill. After the Dolly Holiday show ended at 5, I would sign the AM on KD Radio, and I would do a 5 to 7 a.m. shift, and I had to make sure that the news was just right in the right order, and the coffee was made, and his cup was washed out. And I mean, he would come in. I know Bill's going to love me, but he would come in and he'd be pretty grumpy until he had a few coffees and woke up and stuff. And I think his first hour on the air was mostly canned stuff, network stuff and everything too. So he had
Earl Nightingale.
He had a time to warm up and everything, but oh boy.
And he did Free for All too, and so getting that.
Right.
I worked that overnight shift and had to do the same thing that you were just talking about. Only I never drank coffee. Which means that if you don't drink coffee, you don't know how to make coffee. And Bill came in and finally says, your coffee is so bad, you don't have to make coffee anymore. And he made his own. Another person that you worked with for quite a while in a couple of different places was Steve Rimmel, the Fat Daddy. What's
right.
your thoughts about Steve?
Oh, well, he was truly a friend, a person that you look up to. Probably had one of the most... interesting, I'll say, lifestyles, but at heart was a real gentleman and a compassionate, nice, friendly person. But most of my memories go with what we were doing in Laramie. But in Casper, we would go out, like we mentioned earlier, and test the signals and stuff for the FM station. And he was so proud of Katie's powerful signal for a 1,000-watt station, and he had... really done some wizardry with the ground system underneath the broadcast tower, and he could tweak a ham radio like, like, I don't know what. Anyway.
Like playing a piano or an organ.
Yeah, I was going to say like tuning a banjo, but you can't tune a banjo. So. Anyway, so he was really proud to drive, you know, as far as he could up Interstate 25 or out past Alcove or places
Midwest
and just see where
was really proud to get to Midwest.
Right. And of course it had a commercial value too, because they got some big time commercial packages from marketing people out of the big cities, Chicago and Denver and stuff, because, you know, they would show their program coverage map and, you know, like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres of land.
Pure,
you know, nobody ever mentioned
antelope.
There were more antelope than people out there, but it looks great on a map. And so he was always trying to help tweak that map a little bit. He was pure genius as far as anything electric, and we played with the electric stuff. And I'm sure I was mostly the guy in the middle of the slowing him down or whatever.
The gopher guy.
Yeah, hand me this or hand me that or can you reach that? He had an old Barracuda car when the Barracuda first came out, and he had it set up like Radio Central. He had three or four ham rigs in there, an antenna farm on the back of it, and the back seat would fold down so you could get probably three or four cases of Coors in there.
Or yeah.
He smoked, he hardlined, mainlined Camel cigarettes, and so there was always a beer can in one hand and a Camel in the other, but... That was kind of what we did. But he was very inventive. Steve invented a thing I used when we were doing sports play-by-play stuff. We called it the Kiwi Can. He would take the power off of a headset of a telephone. And well, prior to this, you had to, if you're going to do a remote broadcast from somebody, from someplace, in those days you would use the telephone lines, and you had to have a dedicated telephone line, get it patched through the switching offices of the phone company to the radio station, which just meant, you know, headaches and paperwork. And
especially if they weren't done. Right.
A bureaucracy to have to go through. Well, he invented a little thing in actually a shoe polish can. We called it the Kiwi Can, that would alligator clip onto the mouthpiece of a regular telephone thing. So all you really had to do was be at a telephone and call the radio station. And this thing would get its power from the telephone company, and I think
the microphone in on one end.
Everything, yeah, it had a little mic jack, and then you were on your way. But you know, Steve grew up with the transistor. His big transmitters and stuff were all still vacuum tube stuff. But a lot of the stuff he was inventing, he was just trying to learn how transistors worked and FETs and that sort of stuff. If he could miniaturize it, make a switch that worked without relay
contacts
and stuff, that was his thing. Another example of something that he invented that took him away from us, a delay system for the free-for-all broadcast. It was occasionally that it was a live telephone call-in show, and occasionally you would get some guest who would precipitate an angry caller or something. So they decided they had to be able to delay that thing from going out on the air long enough that they could push a red button and, whoa, you know.
The panic button.
Because an F-bomb in those days was really, you could lose your license.
Yes.
In those days.
Even if you said damn or hell.
Yeah, yeah.
There were those magic seven words that were never supposed
so
to be.
So Steve invented it was crude at first, but it kept getting tweaked almost every night for years, a system of delaying the sound going out to the transmitter. From the studio to the transmitter in line with those telephone lines, he first had a tape loop, and then he eventually, he heard things on the albums of the rock stars where they were doing the reverse echo thing, mm-hmm. the echo you hear first and then the sound. So he realized there's some stuff here I can use, and he figured out how to do all of that, was really impressed with that. There was a joining chirp that the CBS radio network would send out, and he learned how to start making that activate different things at the proper time. I can't remember.
It was solid state.
Yeah.
Whereas the CBS net alert was tube type.
Yeah. So away he goes. He gets hired away from us by either Gates.
It was Gates.
It was at Gates Electronics or some big place. And he left and went to Connecticut.
I have one additional thing that you may or may not remember. You were in the ski patrol.
I was in the ski patrol.
And you are the reason I got my first full-time job.
I know exactly where you're going with this. I convinced
nighttime disc jockey.
I convinced Dick Burton, the nighttime guy, to go skiing with me on a Saturday. Long story short, he broke his femur. I mean, which is a serious leg break. And they had
on
to
his
haul him
third
off.
Third run down the mountain.
Had to
it?
Haul him off. I think he was on the bunny slope. They had to haul him down the mountain on an ambulance and the whole bit. It was a serious deal. He was laid up for a long time. Walked probably still with a cane. I don't know.
But I know that in those days when you broke the femur, you were in bed in traction for a long time.
Right. Exactly.
And he was. I know he was. As I remember, I did his show for at least 6 months. And then when he came back, he was still on crutches and a cane and all, but it was all your fault.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, he never let me forget that after that happened. And